Okay, well, welcome everyone. Tonight's session is on memorizing, and what I'm going to do is talk about briefly some of the myths of memorizing. I could talk about why memorizing, but I'm kind of thinking if you're all on the call, you have an agenda of your own in terms of memorizing, so I won't spend time there. So I'm going to talk about the myths of memorizing. I'm going to talk a little bit about how our brains want information, because if we understand that and respect that, it makes memorizing a whole lot easier. And then I'm going to go into some specific strategies around memorizing. And as usual, we'll have questions and answers at the end. And unusually, I'm going to give you some homework. And, of course, you'll be able to choose whether you want to do it or not. But just a little bit of background. In addition to having studied music and harp, several years ago, I took a training called neuro-linguistic programming and some other training that involved right-left brain learning strategies. And when I was growing up, I did not learn how to memorize music at all. I didn't learn how to retain repertoire. I just didn't understand how to process it mentally. And it wasn't until I was an adult and had been away from the harp for several years that I took this training. And as I read about learning strategies and how the brain likes to learn and specific ways that you can facilitate learning, I kind of went, oh, well, that's how come I don't remember music, and that's how come I have had such a problem in processing it and learning it. So I am very conscious of very specific things that I've done to move from always being dependent on sheet music, and always learning pieces very laboriously, memorizing them laboriously, and forgetting them 2 seconds after a recital, to where I am now, which is very comfortable with sitting down anytime, any place, and playing, and being able to play, for a pretty long time in both pieces, some limited amount of my own, some improvisation. And it hasn't taken me a huge amount of effort to do that. I simply started with one thing at a time and tried it and used it and then added and added and added. And at this point in time, I can take a page of sheet music or a two-page Celtic piece and have it pretty well memorized by the end of the first one or two times that I'm practicing it. That's not to say that I'm proficient in playing it, and it's not to say that I don't have work to do to get it up to speed and so forth. But in terms of having a sense of where the piece is and being able to leave the music part of the time when I'm practicing, that's a pretty normal result. And I think that's available for all of us. So I'm going to go through some of the myths that I hear about memorizing. The first one is that you're kind of either born with it or not, and particularly those of us who are adults, we kind of think that if we haven't been able to do it up to now, we there's no possibility that we can easily do it in the future or even do it with work. That's just not true. Memorizing is a skill, and it's like anything else. You learn it one piece at a time. A second myth, I think, is that you need to have a piece learned before you even consider memorizing it. That certainly is the way I grew up. But the reality is that you can both learn and memorize a piece at the same time, so that by the time you are proficient with the piece, you also have long since left the music and can be flexible with the music. Another myth is that if you play the tune often enough and enough times, you'll automatically remember it. And maybe some people do that. I never did. Never. and it's definitely not a strategy that most of us can count on. It's kind of like when you're driving in a car, you pay attention to the road, you know the route. If you're the passenger all the time, and then suddenly you find that you have to find your way to that place that you've always been a passenger at, many of us don't, you know, we kind of have a foggy notion, but we didn't pay attention to the landmarks. We didn't pay attention to whether, did we really turn left or did we turn right? Was it really a mile or was it more like 5 miles? So the same is true. If what you do is continue to rely on music and play it over and over and over, you're pretty unconscious about the things that you would need to be conscious about to remember what you're doing. Another myth is that memorizing is really hard work. And why would you bother? Because you're going to forget it soon anyway. You know, in one side of the brain and out the other. Another one is that you can play better and more easily with music because you don't have to think about the notes, that you can always find your place. My experience with sheet music is that I can lose my place just as well as I can lose it in my memory. And if I have been able to learn a piece and I kind of understand the structures underneath it and I lose my place, I'm really not lost. I can just I can improvise, and I can be relaxed with it. So part of it is getting one, you know, having this experience. Once you get one under your belt and you kind of get that feel, it gets easier every time. And the last myth is that it's scary. I mean, if you forget your music and you don't have that page to refer to, then what do you fall back on? And I would say the reality for me is that once I started taking the time to learn one piece at a time and I changed my practice habits to be able to do that, that's when I became free with music. And that's when I began to be able to improvise and be comfortable. So that's kind of the story, I think, behind why, you know, why we can't memorize or don't want to memorize or we think it's hard. Now I want to talk a little bit about how our brains like to have information presented to it, because one of the things that keeps us from learning music easily and retaining it is because we don't respect the way our brain wants to get the information. We just keep trying to shove it in. So the first thing is, and incidentally, I will be sending out some notes after this. So make notes to the extent you're comfortable, but we'll cover a fair amount of material and you will have the opportunity to review the information. The brain likes information chunked. If you think about that saying, you can eat an elephant one bite at a time, that's really true for memorizing and for learning music. The brain likes to have 3 to 5 pieces of information. If you think of phone numbers or social security numbers, do you want to see a 9-digit social security number with no dashes, or do you want to see the dashes? Same with credit card numbers. Same with phone numbers. We don't want to see 11 or 12 or 13 numbers with no break in them. It's hard to read. So that's not an accident. That's how your brain wants to see information. There are a lot of ways to chunk things. Part of it is length, but you could be chunking a piece in terms of what is the left hand doing, what's the right hand doing, what kind of phrases are in it, what are the beginnings, the ends, the transitions, what are chords, what intervals, what rhythm, what melody. All of those things, if you pay attention to them individually up front, it gives you a much better picture as you move through learning the piece. The second thing is that our natural memory tends to remember beginnings and ends, and we tend to lose what's in the middle. So when you are learning a piece or trying to memorize it, the more beginnings and ends you have as you move through it, the easier it is going to be to remember it. So instead of doing a marathon practice session with no breaks, take a break. Take 2 or 3 breaks. You don't have to go eat a pizza, but just take some time, stretch, whatever. One of the ways that you would be making these chunks is simply to do three measures at a time. Don't play the piece from the beginning to the end. Just take it in really small chunks, and you end up with a beginning and an end on that. And then you combine two chunks, and you combine three chunks, and so forth. Also, the brain remembers related information, and it wants to relate new information to what it already knows. So if you think about the function of thinking in terms of chords, a C chord is a C, E, G all the time. And the 1-3-5 is part of that pattern that you would relate. A 1-5-8 could be. And whether you're playing a C chord or an F chord, those are patterns. You don't have to memorize every note. Once you determine that you're in C and you need a C chord, you know that you can use a C, E, or G any place. You don't need to memorize that you've got a C and then an E and then a G. The brain learns fastest when multiple senses are being used. So we feel, we hear, we see. So you can both see and feel your fingers on the strings. You can see the sheet music for reference when you're using it. Actually, you can see sheet music even when you don't have it in front of you. That's how some people remember. They actually have a picture of the sheet music in their brain. You can see and feel chords. You can sing the melody. You can listen to a recording, and so forth. I mean, if you notice and learn a tune from several perspectives, it's going to go in much more easily and much faster and stay there. Consistent and correct repetition is really, really critical. If you think about going through a field of tall grasses and you go once on one path and then you take a different route the second time and another route the third time and another route the fourth time, maybe the fifth time you come back to the first one, but then you're off someplace else, you will not really wear a path in that field. But if every single time you take exactly the same path, you will wear a path in the field, and it will get wider and wider and deeper and deeper. And that's the way our brain retains information. If what you do is give it the piece that you're trying to learn, the phrase that you're trying to learn, you do it correctly every single time, even if you have to do it five times slower than you think it should be. If it's correct every single time, you'll automatically speed up and you'll learn it much faster, because what you're doing in your brain is actually creating a highway. And if you don't go the same way every time, your brain is confused. It can't rely on that pathway. So those are some facts around how the brain wants to have information. And what we tend to do, I think, for many of us, is take a piece and play it from beginning to end, beginning to end, beginning to end, beginning to end. And we stumble over the same places rather than stopping and working on them, and we go beginning to end. And the end is usually not as polished as the beginning, and then we've got these bloopers in the middle. So in terms of strategies to just get started on a piece, one of the things to do is pay attention to information about the piece, like what is the title, what's the key, maybe what's the origin of the piece, what's the feel of the piece, is it a lullaby, is it a waltz, is it a jig, is there a story to it, is there a particular mood? You may think that that's really obvious to do all those things, but in reading sheet music, I never knew the titles. I can't say never, but often didn't know the titles of what I was playing. I hadn't paid attention to the keys because I was playing a pedal harp, and once you set the pedals or as you read through, I mean, you don't need to be really thinking about the key all the time. I knew the tempo, but I just had not paid attention to those details. And so when I got done learning the piece, and then maybe I wasn't playing it anymore for a while, you know, in theory it would be filed away. Well, it got filed away, but since I didn't have a name for it, where would I go in my filing cabinet? I couldn't. I did that with virtually every piece that I was reading through. So pay attention up front when you're first starting a piece to some of those details. It will just help things get seated. The second thing that I would do is a very specific strategy, and I'm talking in part about, I guess I'm going to language it based on if you're learning a piece, because I really think that as you learn, you should be memorizing. By the time you have the piece under your fingers, if you're working it correctly, you will already automatically know it. You won't be a separate step in what you're doing. If you've got a piece that you already know and now you want to memorize it and practice this strategy, you can simply adapt. But I'll be talking about kind of the same thing. So if you were learning a new piece, you would sight read the piece a couple of times to get the sense of it. And you might sight read left hand first and then right hand. Depends on your ability in sight reading. Or you might do it together. You're not trying to get every note. You're trying to get a feel for this piece. It's kind of like reading an overview and a chapter summary before diving into the detail in a book. What that does is it tells your brain where you're going to take it. The third thing that I would do is analyze the piece itself. And depending on your knowledge and comfort with concepts in music theory, this may sound really tough and hard, and you've got to have all this music theory. You don't. I don't have it. If you pick even two or three concepts, it will help you. So when you're analyzing the piece, again, it's part of it's noticing what's happening. But when you look at a piece, you'll discover, if you start looking at phrases, you'll notice that you have phrases that are repeated over and over and over. You might have a two-page piece that has only really two or three basic phrases to it, and they just have different variations. So one of the things to do is photocopy a piece so that you can kind of mark it up. You might color code phrases that are the same or just mark them. So you're going to look at phrases, notice when it's being repeated. You would want to determine if you've got A, B, C parts and repeats. You'd want to notice what patterns are being used both in the bass and in your melody line, but mainly I think you see patterns that you can use in the bass. The piece that I'm going to send you for homework is the Sheeran's Know For You. It's arranged by Lori Riley. And when you look at the bass, I mean, look at the page, it's got lots of notes on it. But if you pay attention to what's going on in the bass, it's a 1-5-8 starting on C, moves down to B, 1-5-8, moves down to A, 1-5-8. And that's, so if you remember that you start on a C, and you're doing a series of 1-5-8s that are going down, and you remember where they end, that's really all you have to remember out of all that. You don't have to remember the C, G, C, B, whatever it is, each of those chords. That is more common than you might think in pieces when you start noticing it. In playing the melody, you'll find repeats, so you'll probably find patterns. You might pay attention to the fingering, the chord intervals. One of the things to do is use consistent fingerings. In the same way I said, play a piece correctly every time you practice whatever you're practicing, use the same fingering. So one of the things to do up front is actually go through a piece and finger it the way you think you want to have it. Mark the fingering on the page. As you practice, if you find that you are always missing one phrase, one of the first things to check is, did you just blow it on the fingering? Did you come up with some fingering that you thought would work, but it's really not falling under your fingers well? Well, then you ought to change it so that you're using consistent fingering. So those are some of the things to notice when you're analyzing the piece up front. When you start working on the piece, my recommendation is you practice the right and the left hand separately. And I can't emphasize slowly enough. One of the things that's true in therapeutic music is that we need to be relaxed in the tempos. So I don't think we have to be off to races, but you definitely want to be practicing as slowly as you need to be able to do it right every single time. And you could practice the whole piece in phrases, all of your right hand first. Practice a phrase or three measures, and the next phrase and three measures, put them together, add another three. And you also certainly can take three measures and practice with your right hand and get that down so you're really comfortable. Practice it with your left hand. Have that be comfortable and put them together. And then go on to the next phrase and do the same thing. And then go back and put them together so you've got whatever, six measures or whatever you put together. And you'll probably find you have to work on the measure before and after, the measure before the new phrase and after the phrase starts, because you've got a transition there. And part of what you need to do is get your brain to make that transition. If you've got rough spots, if you've got a measure that you stumble over every time, make an exercise of it. Strip it out of the piece. When you come to practice the piece, that would be the first thing that you would home in. And do it slowly and work on it. So when you go back to a piece, what's really, really helpful is just if you mark the places that you're having any trouble, go to those places before you do anything else. Practice them and review them, then begin to put them back into the piece. One of the things that's kind of interesting is to work backwards in the piece. Take the last three measures and then the next and the next and the next. And I'm not suggesting you play it backwards, but as you begin to build that, what you'll find is that you don't have to start at the beginning and go through to the end to know where you are. It makes you a whole lot more comfortable with stopping and starting any place, which means that when you're in performance mode, if you forget something, you've got a lot better chance of picking it up easily and not going into panic over that. And it does not, interestingly enough, it does not confuse the brain to do that, because you get each chunk separately. There is something that the brain really likes and responds to, and that is a practice cycle or a learning cycle of review, new review, new review. So the review part of it initially, if you're learning a new piece, the review part of it for the brain is that you take the time to analyze it and relate the patterns, relate it to information that you already know. And then you tackle a new set of phrases. And then once you get done with those, review. And when you sit down the next time, review, do something new, and review. And when you take breaks, review, new, review. That will make a huge difference in how fast you acquire new repertoire. Practice in short intervals. It doesn't work to do marathon sessions. You would be better off to do 10 minutes every day than 1 hour a week or 2 hours once a week. And again, remember the brain naturally remembers its beginning and endings. So give lots of them. Practice the transition between phrases and sections. And then mentally practice, you know, whether you take showers or in the bath or while you walk, if you think about a piece and you kind of have a sense of where it's going, and even some of the fingering that goes with it. As you move through that piece, if you get stuck and you pay attention, probably you're moving through it mentally faster than you are mentally ready to move through it. And if you can't move through it at a speed mentally, you absolutely are not going to have your fingers following the instructions. It was really interesting to me when I first paid attention to this and noticed it. I take baths, and I was in the bath and actually, you know, kind of walking through the piece of fingering. And I learned every time I stumbled, it's because I was at a pace that was too fast and my brain had not been able to pick up the transitions. And ultimately, what you want to be able to do is play and know what's coming. Be in a place and be ready for the next thing, not be in a place and then go, oh my gosh, what do I do next? And the brain has to have practice in doing that, and it has to have time to integrate and absorb that information. So it's not just about what your fingers are doing. Your brain needs to be able to do that. And mental rehearsing is powerful. The studies have shown that, it's been a long time since I read these statistics, but they did a study with basketball players, and they found that basketball players who were sitting on the sidelines practicing a free throw perfectly every time in their mind did better than even the guys who were actually practicing, because the folks on the bench did it perfectly every single time. And their brain, you know, was ready to do the muscle movements behind that. So the mental rehearsal is very, very powerful, and it's really kind of fun to do. So that's the information that I wanted to present. We'll have questions and answers in a minute, but what I'd like to remind you of is, you don't have to do all of these things. It's a lot. If you just take two or three things that grabbed your attention, you're curious about, or they really interest you, and you start incorporating them into your memorizing and or learning, whatever you're doing, you'll notice a difference. And then pick up a couple more. You know, your success is not dependent on you doing every single one of these things all the time. It's dependent on you're doing something different than what you're doing now, and it's dependent on starting and doing something, picking one. I'm going to send you all the sheet music for the Sheerans Know For You, and what I'd like to suggest, and I'll send you notes. What I'd like to suggest is that by the weekend, you actually take the piece and you notice what you notice, you analyze it the way you analyze it. If you have another piece that you really want to memorize and you would rather deal with that, then that's fine. You can, you know, you can do it on that piece. And I'm going to invite you to, once you have done that, to send me an email. And I'll be happy to look at what you've done, make any comments, any suggestions, answer any questions that I can answer. But I really, I just can't encourage you enough to just do it. Pick something and do it. And the fact that it's never worked for you before, let it go and start fresh and just be curious about what does it take. And how does it work for you? So I'm going to open it up at this point for questions and answers. And before I do that, though, is there anyone? So I'll open it up for questions. And if you're on mute, remember, you'll have to take yourself off mute. No questions?
And Dee, this is Linda Still.
Okay, Linda,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry, who is it?
Linda Friedel in Washington.
Okay, all right.
Hi. Can you give us a further example of doing the mental rehearsing?
Yeah, let me think on that a minute. Well,
what kind of a procedure you go through for mental rehearsing?
Well, one of the things that I discovered several years ago, but after I had done some of the learning strategy study, I was in a gym walking laps, and I all of a sudden, and I was listening to something, and I all of a sudden realized that I wasn't listening to something, I was kind of thinking about something. I all of a sudden realized that I was fingering. I actually was doing fingering as I was walking. And it dumbfounded me, and I also noticed that I had a tune going on in my head. And years ago when the film Mozart came out, I saw it, and I went away from that, and I thought, God, he actually heard stuff in his head. And I never did. I could sing tunes, but I never had the tunes going on in my head as a guide to get from A to B. And so I started consciously, one of the things that I did in mental rehearsal is that I made sure that I could remember the tune, that I could reproduce the tune mentally. For some of you, that will be a no-brainer and you do it anyway. Now you might use it differently, but that would be a simple way to do it. One of the things that also happened for me is I tend to be an auditory learner, and auditory learning tends to be rote, and you got to start at the beginning and go to the end. And if you think about how waiters give you specials, there are some waiters that if you interrupt them, they have to go back to the beginning because that's where their cue comes from. A tells you you're going to go to B, B tells you you're going to go to C. People who learn visually, they've got pictures, so they don't care whether you stop them in the middle or not. They just go home in on the picture, and they march right on down the path. I actually see pictures of music. Sometimes I can see my fingering. Sometimes I can actually see the notes. More often now, it's more the chord structure. And not necessarily just literally on the sheet music, but sometimes it is. Does that help?
Yes. I think it kind of comes down to that old term visualization.
It is visualization, and for those of us who don't know we visualize or we don't do it very well, our other senses come first. You can even do it with having a sense of. You know, whether that's a feeling, whether it's your hearing sense. Visualizing definitely is going to help you out because in a visual strategy, you have random access to the information, just like on a CD. If you have learned it auditorially, it's sequential. It's like the old tapes. And if you want to get to the middle, you've got to start at the beginning and go to the middle. You just don't, it's not as easy to move through the tape.
Right.
And one of the ways that you can support visual memory, one of the things they learned in NLP is that your eye position triggers the brain to do visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. So if I am thinking about the most beautiful rose I ever saw in my life, and anybody, if I paid attention to what my eyes are doing, they're going up to my left, upper left. And if I am remembering a song and I'm remembering the melody, they're going to go to my left ear. And if I'm remembering some kind of feeling, my eyes are likely to go down. Well, the value in knowing that is that you can set your music. And most of us are organized, so we do visual memory up to the left. There are a few who do the opposite. They do it on the right. But since we have our music stands on the left, if you raise your music stand up, you wouldn't want to do it in concert, but raise it up, it naturally throws your eye into a visual remember position. Another thing you can do is, while you're doing mental rehearsal, is think about how things feel. And a really fun thing to do, which is very interesting, is go play in the dark and discover that you do not need your eyes to find your way around your strengths like you think you do. You'll be amazed. I mean, I'm clear I can do intervals and scales and that kind of thing, you know, blindfolded. But what dumbfounded me is that I could jump octaves and be pretty accurate.
This is Betsy. Can you include the business about looking where your eyes are in the notes that you send us?
I will make a note of it to do that. And I also, in the notes, there will be two books. One is called Not Pulling Strings. It's by Joseph O'Connor. And he is a guitarist who also studied neurolinguistic programming and applied it to music. It's a really interesting book, and it talks about these strategies in more detail. So it's a really nice reference.
I wasn't able to hear over that static.
Yes, the name of the book is Not Pulling Strings.
Thank you.
And,
okay.
And it's by Joseph O'Connor, and it'll be on your notes. And
Great, thank you.
Kathy,
this is Kathy again.
Okay, you're much clearer now.
Okay, my question was, do you think things are opposite for those of us who are left-handed?
The reality is no. That is one thing that is not correlated to left and right-handedness. The vast majority of people, and you could test yourself on it. If you think about either... you know, some site that you've seen that you really like, or you think about what did that dress look like, something in your memory, and just, you know, kind of relax your eyes and pay attention to where your eyes go. That'll be an indicator. We do visual memory on one side, and we make up new things. Like if I thought, gosh, I've got this orange dress, and I wonder... if what color shawl would go with it, I would do that up in my visual right, because I'm organized that way. So I would go up to the right to construct, and I would go to the left to remember. And auditorially, I remember on the left and I construct on the right. So one of the ways that was used by O'Connor is he was teaching a student who couldn't get rhythms. He would tap out rhythms and ask the student to repeat them. And the student never could do it. And finally he said, I'll use this information I have. And so he asked the student some calibrating questions, which is nothing more than asking questions that would cause him to do visual memory, auditory memory, whatever. And he paid attention to where did his eyes go. And once he knew where this student's eyes went, then he said, okay, I'm going to tap out a rhythm, and I want you to look at my hand over here. And he put his hand in the student's auditory remembered visual sphere. And he tapped out the rhythm, and the student tapped it back immediately. So the eye stuff is really, really powerful and kind of fun to work with. But you can do your own. You can kind of pay attention yourself to what you're doing once you understand it. Are there any other questions?
I have one. This is Judy from Massachusetts. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And is it Judy Green? No.
No, it's Judy Mitchell.
Judy Mitchell. I'm sorry. I'm looking at a different Judy. Okay.
Do we learn... in a group of these, like do we learn auditorily and visually? I've been hearing you speak about visual. Is this the sort of way we should be gearing ourselves to improve our memory, is by visual? I'd just like to know how I'm doing this, because I used to be better at memorizing when I was younger than I am now, because I didn't have any inhibitions about it. I think, for one thing. I just kind of did it. Now it seems to be more of an arduous process for me. So I'm just, I'd like to try to zone in on how I learn, how I memorize, rather.
Yeah. Well, you know, a visual memory strategy is a top-of-the-line strategy because it gives you random access. It's unlimited. An auditory strategy, which of course is a strategy we often would apply to things we hear, music, is it tends to be rote. You want the first thing that you have in there, keys the second thing, keys the third, keys the fourth. It's just like if I ask you to sing the Star Spangled Banner and go to the fifth phrase. Most of us are going to start at the beginning to even figure out what the second phrase is if we haven't sung it very recently. And that's going to cue us to the third phrase and to the fourth phrase and to the fifth phrase. And one of the other characteristics about auditory memory is that it's limited in its size and the way the brain works with it, and it really needs this 3 to 5 chunks of information. That's really important, because if what you do is you feed in a string of 8, by the time it gets to the 5, it pushes out what it's got to make room for the new. And if you use it effectively, it's wonderful. It becomes very easy to learn things. But that the you've heard of probably of the 5 to 9, plus or minus two, is what the brain is capable of remembering. Well, that's 5 to 9. And in my experience, in the work, and I taught hundreds of people, 5 was closer to the maximum of what we want. If you think about when you go to the grocery store, oh, I need butter. Oh, I need milk. You're driving a little further. Oh, I need bread. Isn't there a point there where you say, oh, I'm not going to remember these. I need to write them down? And if you pay attention to that point, that's your point. That's your 3 to 5.
I see. So we can sort of train ourselves to shift from one method of memorizing to another.
You absolutely can. I'm proof of it.
We can all do this.
I am convinced that it's possible to do. The obstacle for most of us is impatience.
Yep.
And we want it all right now. I mean, we're sitting with 20 pieces or 30 pieces. We want to be able to play them.
Yeah.
My gosh, this is going to take 10,000 years.
That's right. That's how you feel.
So
you feel kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah. So we don't even start with the one. And what I'm telling you and suggesting is start with the one. Forget about the rest that you want to go. Handle the one, because the one will lead to two, and two will lead even faster to three. And, you know, I didn't have memorized repertoire, and when I started my internship, I was just absolutely committed to doing it without music. Just didn't want to trip over it. So I had a lot of repertoire, but not memorized. So I took my favorite pieces, and I memorized them, and I don't know if that was 10 or 15 that I ended up with. And then at one point I said, well, you know, if I would just take one piece a week and work on memorizing, think what I'd have at the end of a year.
Wow, yeah.
And so I think part of it is look at it in the long haul, and what you were doing with your first piece is developing a skill and getting a comfort with it and a feel around it.
Okay.
Does that help?
Helps a lot.
But it is absolutely possible. I'm totally convinced it's possible for all of us. The issue is that we don't want to do something different, and then we're overwhelmed, and we think it's all got to happen 10 minutes ago. What I found, because this has been a multi-year process, although it just sprang to life since I started doing this work, I've found that it's just been a joy because I've been able to take one piece and add another and add another and add another, and I have not worked and labored to
do
what
I'm doing. I know that when I play, perform anywhere, and I have pieces that are memorized, and I enjoy it so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, it really frees me up to really get into the music, to relax a lot more, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I just envision myself playing like this, and it sounds great, you know?
Yeah.
And I just felt kind of overwhelmed. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I just felt like I can't learn all the stuff. I can maybe learn a few, and then that's it, you know?
Well, and, you know,
But it's a start.
Because I work full time and I direct the course and I have other things going on in my personal life, I'm not sitting practicing every week. I play in a hospice once a week. I will be doing more beginning next year, but right now I'm not spending that kind of time. And my repertoire, I have maybe 15, 20 max, probably closer to 15 memorized pieces. I'm very comfortable with improvising and very comfortable with stretching out, you know, really leisurely doing things. And they're pieces I love, and I don't really care whether I don't need 40 pieces. I don't need to, if someone says, well, do you know such and such a piece? I'm very comfortable in saying, I'm sorry, I don't, but let me try this. Let me
Good.
Know how you like it. You just do not need hundreds of pieces. You don't have to meet everybody's requests. It's not about tunes.
That's good. That's good. Thanks a lot. That's good.
That's
yeah.
pretty freeing to hear.
Well, it is totally true. I think it's wonderful, people who do have tune after tune after tune, and they can do all the oldies but goodies. But it is not mandatory. If you get 10 or 15 things that are really solid, and you're comfortable with doing some improvisation and the transitions between pieces, you're in good shape.
Yeah, you are.
There are some people who really only know three pieces, and they've done the work. I don't recommend that, but
yeah.
It could be done.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes, this is Julie Garrigan.
Yes.
If you... are trying to memorize a piece that you really like, that you're comfortable reading, is there any sort of confusion in your brain if you try to use these strategies on a piece that you already play more comfortably just from sheet music?
No. No, there's not. I mean, that's the case with a lot of the music that I ended up memorizing. I was very comfortable playing it from the sheet music.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, what I will do is send out notes and a PDF of the Sharon's Know for You. And if that's something that you want to work with, that's fine. If you have a different piece that you'd like to work with, that's fine. I'm obviously not going to keep score, so if you choose not to provide me with any feedback or results, your choice in total. I invite you to do it because I want you to get the benefit of what we're talking about. And you have to go try something different. And now is better than tomorrow.
Dee, in the email that you're going to send us with the PDF file, you'll send us instructions on how to approach this or what kinds of things you want feedback on?
I'm going to give you notes on what I've covered. So you've got something to review
right.
and choose, and you can say, great, I think... I'm going to play around with chunking, and I'm going to check for phrasing. Maybe that's all you do. I'm going to invite you to take the concepts and apply them either to that piece or the piece of your choice.
See, and are you going to have this recording available that we can listen to it again?
Yes, it will be.
Oh, that'll be great.
So there isn't a right way to do this. The whole point of doing a homework assignment, so to speak, is to get you to just go look at a piece and do something with it. And begin and understand, you know, you may try and do that and get lost, and I'm happy to hear from you, and I'll be happy to work with you. My guess is once you start looking at these pieces, you'll go, oh, gosh, that's useful. But you may also get overwhelmed by it. If you do, use me. I think it's a really, it's just such a useful, important skill, and it provides so much to what we're doing. Any other comments, questions?
Thanks so much, Dee. This has been really enlightening.
Well, thank you for joining me, and be in touch. Good night.
Good night.